The Steelers say they're excited about Justin Fields starting in week two. Could he become the next Geno Smith? For the record, I have friends in Seattle. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. Geno's winning 9 games, no playoff wins. Everybody knows they're waiting for the next quarterback. He's fine for now, placeholder. At best, that's probably what Justin Fields is.
Why does Justin Fields have to be Geno Smith? And I think what Geno Smith has done is admirable, not just because he's a West Virginia guy, but because his career stunk. And now he gets paid because he decidedly does not stink. So I don't think that Geno Smith and talking about him in that way really is a pejorative. But for the sake of argument, I'll make it one. Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. That was obviously Colin Cowherd, who says the Steelers are one of 7 teams that he knows already is not going to win the Super Bowl because the quarterback play is not going to be good enough, because the offense is not going to be good enough. Now, I said before the season that you know the Steelers aren't winning the Super Bowl, so I'm not necessarily going to disagree with him there. The Steelers probably aren't going to win the Super Bowl this year. But if they do, it's probably because of Justin Fields and not Russell Wilson. I'm a Russ believer. I said coming into the season, that Russell Wilson gives the Steelers the best chance to win, particularly early in the season behind an inexperienced offensive line, a guy that's not going to turn the football over, a guy that still has a great deep ball, and a guy that's really good in the red zone. 26 touchdowns to 8 interceptions last year, 20 touchdowns in the red zone to just 1 interception. One of the better quarterbacks in football last season, according to passer rating, when blitzed, when pressured. Russell Wilson can still play the game of football. He's not what he used to be. He's not elite. He is what he is. But I thought he gave the Steelers the best chance to win. If they're going to win the Super Bowl, though, if they are going to prove Colin Cowherd wrong, if they're going to prove me wrong, it's going to have to be with Justin Fields. And that's not just because Russell Wilson's calf is hurt. And I've been told that the injury's worse than what we have all been told by Mike Tomlin in the media. We'll get to that later on in the show. But if the Steelers are to do something truly special this year, if the Steelers are to prove the naysayers wrong, it's going to be because Justin Fields has reached his potential. Justin Fields is a freak athlete. This is a league where you win with freaks. And I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. Patrick Mahomes is a freak. His mobility, his arm strength, his ability to throw off platform, to make any throw on the field, to throw it 65 yards down the field, through a keyhole, throw it behind the back. No look passes. There's not a throw he can't make. There's not a throw he's afraid to make. Patrick Mahomes is a freak. Josh Allen. He runs like Cam Newton. He throws like Brett Favre. He's a freak. We already know what Russell Wilson is. And at this stage of his career, he's not a mutant. He's not a freak. He doesn't have this untapped potential. Justin Fields does. I'm not sitting here selling you guys a bill of goods saying that I believe that Justin Fields will achieve and play up to his potential. I'm not sitting here telling you that Justin Fields is going to grow leaps and bounds from one week to the next all the way through 17 games into the playoffs and lead the Steelers to the promised land, but it's not impossible. You are not going to win the Super Bowl with Russell Wilson. He is a finished product. Russell Wilson is what he is. And what he is a good quarterback who can manage the game, and I think at his best can look like Mason Rudolph did at the end of last season. He'll make his checks. He knows what plays to get you into. He's not going to turn the football over, not going to throw it over the middle of the field, still going to throw a good deep ball, and that can win you regular season games. That can get you to 9-8, 10-7. We've seen that. That can't win you the big one. The only way they win the big one is if Justin Fields, the freak talent, reaches that freak potential. Why does he have to be, in Colin Cowherd's eyes, Geno Smith. Why can't he be Baker Mayfield? Baker Mayfield had flashes, moments, a couple of good seasons in Cleveland. Final year, hurt. Goes to Tampa after a brief trip to LA, where he was actually impressive, coming in on a short week and helping them win a football game. But Baker Mayfield goes to Tampa, and his career reaches new heights. Last season, they win a playoff game against the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that represented the AFC or the NFC in the Super Bowl the year before and was a play or two away from winning that sucker. He beats him in a playoff game. Steelers ain't won a playoff game in 7 years. Baker Mayfield changes franchises, gets better, wins a playoff game. Why can't Justin Fields change franchises, get better, win a playoff game? Why can't Justin Fields be Drew Brees? You're going to see Drew Brees' former coach this weekend in Sean Payton. What a jerk he is. But Drew Brees, not good, not good, not good. Couple of pretty good seasons with San Diego. Better statistical seasons than the ones that we've seen Justin Fields have with Chicago. But there have been moments with Fields. There have been games with Fields. He's garnered MVP votes before, for goodness sakes. Drew Brees goes to New Orleans, has a couple of seasons that looked exactly like the last few in San Diego, then bang, he takes off. Why can't Justin Fields switch teams and be that guy? Why has he got to be Geno Smith? Why can't he be Kurt Warner? Kurt Warner gets cut by the Green Bay Packers. Kurt Warner goes off and plays in XFL, weird football leagues, winds up back with the Rams, is excellent, wins a Super Bowl, goes to the Giants, sucks out loud, then goes to the Cardinals, where he's elite again, and gets them to the Super Bowl. Not all careers have to go linearly. Just because you switch spots doesn't mean that you stink. Doesn't mean that you can't find it. Doesn't mean you can't be Baker. Doesn't mean you can't be Kurt Warner. Doesn't mean you can't be Drew Brees. I don't agree when Colin Cowherd says Justin Fields, the best he can do is turn into Geno Smith. Why? Justin Fields was really impressive last week. First quarterback in team history to have a completion percentage of 70+, a passer rating of 90+, and 50+ rushing yards in a single game. No quarterback in Steelers history has done that. And he did it in the first game, and he did it with one walkthrough practice, where he wasn't officially named the starter until day of the game, behind an offensive line that was missing its top two components, when he had his biggest or one of his biggest plays of the day called back due to penalty. Yeah, he didn't score a touchdown. Yeah, the team didn't score a touchdown. He also only led them to 2-3 and outs. They possessed the ball for 35 minutes, led 6 scoring drives, and with all those things working against him that I've already described, I don't know that we're giving Justin Fields enough credit for what he did in game one. And I am at least open to the possibility that Justin Fields can be a Baker Mayfield or a Drew Brees or a Kurt Warner. Or how about a Y.A. Tittle? How about going in the Wayback Machine to 1961 Y.A. Tittle? More interceptions than touchdowns with the Baltimore Colts. Some up and down seasons, but you look at the statistics, most of the time, the interception number, higher than the touchdown number. He goes to the New York Football Giants in 1961, and he throws 96 touchdowns in 4 seasons, had only thrown 38 in the prior 4 seasons with the Baltimore Colts. Changes teams, late in his career, somehow gets better. It has happened. It can happen. You don't have to cap Justin Fields and say he's got the ceiling of a Geno Smith. This guy is incredibly talented. And if the Steelers are going to win the Super Bowl this year, and again, I don't think it's likely, they're going to do that because Justin Fields reaches his potential, not with Russell Wilson being the guy that is already capped. 412-928-9370. You can react to that. Love to hear from you. No Doran Dickerson today, so the phone lines will be open at 412-928-9370. That's the hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service. trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can tweet me at underscore Adam Crowley, brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. You can text us, brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. So you can react to that when we come back. Are you capping the ceiling of Justin Fields like Colin Cowherd, or are you like me and you're open to any possibility? 412-928-9370. Also, interesting things went down at Steelers practice yesterday that I think will make a lot of Steelers fans happy. We've got Pat Narduzzi at 6:45. So Colin Cowherd says that the best Justin Fields can do is be the next Geno Smith. I don't think we need to cap our guy. I think the sky is the limit for Justin Fields. Doesn't mean he'll ever achieve it, but I'm not, after one game with the Steelers, saying Justin Fields could only ever hope to achieve the career level that Geno Smith reached. And I mentioned some guys that left one team, went to another, and had success. How about a guy who stayed on the same team and his career, bang, exploded? How about Josh Allen? Josh Allen, first few years in the league, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Guy could not hit the short and intermediate throws with any level of accuracy, and now he's an MVP candidate every year. You're allowed to get better. You're allowed to improve. I'm not going to just sit here and say Justin Fields is going to be Geno Smith. Justin Fields is what he is. When you've got this kind of talent, you've got a chance. And I think he's in a much better situation to succeed here than he was in Chicago. I happen to like a lot of what I saw out of the Steelers' offense, even though they didn't put the ball in the end zone last Sunday. And they were able to do good things despite only one day of practice for Fields. And it's a walkthrough practice on a Friday, basically. Despite the two offensive linemen whom they consider to be their best, Seumalo and Fautanu, not being in the lineup. Despite having Van Jefferson as a number two wide receiver, that's not going to change, but that's one of the things that you're stuck with. Jaylen Warren, who's one of the few dynamic pieces they have on the offense, clearly not ready. And yet, six scoring drives, 35 minutes, time of possession, 270 yards, easily could have been 300 if not for the bad pushoff call. I saw enough out of Fields to want to see more. And if he performs well this week, you're going to want to see more again. And that's okay. I said coming into the year, Russell Wilson gives them the best chance to win games early. Well, Justin Fields comes in and wins a game early. He's allowed to change my mind. And if he reaches his full potential, he can lift the Steelers to a higher ceiling than Russell Wilson can. Because Russell Wilson, while I think is a better quarterback than the national narrative would allow you to believe, I also happen to believe he is a finished product. I don't think Justin Fields has to be. I brought up Y.A. Tittle in the first segment. We went all the way back to 1961. Someone texted, Y.A. Tittle, try Norm Van Brocklin, Adam. I think that's different. Norm Van Brocklin had 6 years where he was a really good quarterback. And then he leaves and goes, has a bad year, then goes and wins a championship. Like, he was really good. Then he leaves, bad year, really good again. Justin Fields has had really good moments. I don't think people would argue that he's been really good. So that's why I didn't mention Norm Van Brocklin earlier. But I do love saying his name. 412-928-9370. Let's go to Bob in North for Sales. Hey, Bob.
Hey, good morning. I just want to say this. I liken Justin Fields more to Doug Williams. He played on some bad Tampa Bay Buccaneer teams and showed some talent. And then when he went to Washington, when he got his chance, he performed with the talent around him and won a Super Bowl.
I like that, Bob. I like that a lot. And I want to make things clear because, you know, people misconstrue things on the text line, and I'll let you finish here in a second. I'm not saying that Justin Fields is going to do any of the things that the quarterbacks I mentioned before are going to do. The Baker Mayfields, the Kurt Warners, the Drew Brees. I'm just saying I think it's silly to say he can't.
Exactly. And let's just look at it this way. We don't know what talent he really has because he did not play on good Chicago Bears teams. He comes here and, you know what, he executed the game plan. You know, I would take that six field goals a game if I'm going to win a game. And he didn't turn the ball over, and he sustained drives. And my final thought is this. If Russell Wilson would have started with the two linemen that are out and Jaylen Warren not, you know, on a limited role and so forth, and lost, would we be saying that Russell Wilson is washed up and Justin Fields is our quarterback?
No, I think this has actually worked out perfectly for them, Bob, and I really appreciate the call. Like, you don't want to see this for Russell Wilson. I do feel bad for a guy who got dragged through the mud this offseason and who has a chance, would have had a chance at revenge this week, and I do feel bad for him. But because he's hurt and you're 1-0, you throw Fields out there and you see if he can capture your hearts and minds. With Russell Wilson, I think if he had played well in game one, you're thinking, okay, you can go 10-7, 9-8 again. If Justin Fields goes out there and improves on his first performance and continues to get better, you really can start having some dreams there about what could be. What is his ceiling? Where can he take us? Best case scenario is, if it were Russell Wilson doing those things, you're thinking about 3 years, maybe he's 36. If Justin Fields does nice things, great things, you're thinking about 10 years. He's only 35. He can play, he's only 25. He can play 10 years. 10 years. And in that following season, be younger than Russell Wilson is right now. So this is falling into their lap. And if Justin goes out there and stinks out loud on Sunday, you're not married to him. I think it's a pretty good position to be in. One quarterback that I didn't bring up in all of this is maybe the most pertinent one, by the way. Ryan Tannehill was decidedly average in Miami. Decidedly average. 17 touchdowns, 9 interceptions his last year. An athletic guy. 19 touchdowns, 12 interceptions the year before that. Miami ready to move on. They thought they had a franchise quarterback. Nah, not great. Goes to Tennessee. Has Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator. 2019, 22 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He switches teams, and he has a very good year. And then you move forward in Tennessee, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions in 2020. He gets help by Arthur Smith, and it looks outstanding. You're allowed to get better. It can flame out in one place, and you go to another place, and it winds up being better. Here's what happened at practice yesterday. We've seen video, so I'm allowed to talk about this. Broderick Jones at left tackle, Troy Fautanu at right tackle. Now, this was not a benching of Dan Moore Jr. His ankle swelled up on him. He was not able to go yesterday. So finally, we saw the future and hopefully the president of the Steelers' offensive line. And I think it's time to stop Henry Davising Broderick Jones. Like, you don't need to play him in right field. You don't need to try him at DH. You don't need to mess around at first base. You don't need Broderick Jones at right tackle when the GM came out this offseason and said he's the left tackle of the future. You've got an opportunity here to plug him in where he needs to be. Let him play. Let him stay there. Dan Moore Jr. is your swing tackle. And I think this offense can play better this week with some pieces now in place because you got more talent on the offensive line. Dan Moore Jr. played a great game last week. He really did. Look at the Pro Football Focus numbers. Look at the tape. He played a great game. Maybe the best of his Steelers career. He doesn't have the talent that Broderick Jones does. He doesn't have the talent that Troy Fautanu does. And Arthur Smith has a very offensive line friendly scheme. Bunch of tight ends. Moves the pocket. So I'm not that worried upon further review after watching game one that this line will be too young to protect Justin Fields, too young to run the football. No, I think Arthur Smith will protect them, and this should be a look at the future now this week for your offensive line if Dan Moore Jr. is unable to get healthy. If he does get healthy, I think Mike Tomlin's going to do the dumb thing and play him at left tackle again. All right, coming up next, record set in the NFL for viewership this weekend. But I thought the games were ugly. So what do we make of this? We'll get into it next. Pat Narduzzi at 6:45 talking brawl. Pitt football coach Pat Narduzzi joins us in 10 minutes ahead of the backyard brawl. So when the first line came out on the brawl, right at the beginning of the season, West Virginia was favored by 5.5. 2 days ago, it was 3 points. Yesterday afternoon, it was 1.5. It's now back up to 2, but a lot of the money coming in on the Panthers, and I understand why. West Virginia's secondary through 2 games has been abhorrent, and Pitt's passing attack has been, apart from, you know, a few moments in that first half against Cincinnati, it's been elite. Looking forward to talking to Pat Narduzzi coming up in 10 minutes. I want to get to the bottom of this Cade Bell thing. I've heard him talk a couple of times during the season, including his press conference this week. Just a super impressive guy, and I think Narduzzi deserves a ton of credit for shifting philosophically here to go to a guy who wants to be up-tempo. And he does some weird things that Cade Bell does that we'll get into with Narduzzi. I'm hoping he can shed some light on that. Speaking of another coach, our Twitter poll today is brought to you by P.J. Fitzpatrick Home Improvement. TrustPJ.com. Who's had a better career, Mike Tomlin or Sean Payton? 85% of people have voted on this. I posted it yesterday. I want to get into that coming up a little bit later on in the show. But right now, record set across the NFL this weekend. On average, 21 million people watched games this weekend. 21 million people. The highest in NFL history. And the first thing that comes to my mind when I read that is, huh? There was a ton of bad quarterback play this weekend. I don't happen to think the league is in a good place from an aesthetic standpoint. You're not really allowed to play defense. If scores are down, it's usually attributed to being ugly offense anymore. Well, the Steelers, and I'll throw this number out there, when the Steelers beat the Ravens to win the AFC North in 2008, 13-9, the second most famous 13-9 game, it wasn't looked at as bad offense. It was looked at as elite defense between two teams that hated each other, and it was beautiful. The AFC Championship game that year, it wasn't looked at as bad offense. It was looked at as beautiful defensive football. And that all changed in 2010. I think the best version of the NFL was between the year 2000 and the year 2010. Back when you had elite quarterbacks like Tom Brady, like Peyton Manning, like Aaron Rodgers, like Ben Roethlisberger, like Philip Rivers, like, at times, Eli Manning. So you had that. Those teams could score points. A little bit before that, Dante Culpepper in the 1990s with the late 1990s, early 2000s with Minnesota. The greatest show on turf. You could have great offense, and the great offense you knew was going up against great defense. That was the best era of the NFL for me. Now, I'm young. I'm 33. I'm young-ish. Don't feel young. Went to the spine specialist yesterday. I was the youngest guy in there by 40 years. So I ain't seen a ton of football, but I thought the best ball was between 2000 and 2010. So why are more people watching now? I think it's actually pretty simple. I don't think the game is good. And last week was really mostly nasty. But I think we care about different things. Now we care about fantasy football. Now sports gambling has been legalized. So you're going to watch an ugly game. You might even watch a blowout game to see if the team covers the spread. You got people that are going to stick around to the end of crap games now in a way that they never would have done before. There's always been gambling, but now it's legalized because they want to know, does my team win or lose by 9.5 points? Right? So everyone likes watching the NFL. We always have. But now you're going to sit around and you're going to watch an entire game all the way through because there could be a backdoor cover. More now than ever before. Because you've got fantasy players too. Garbage time. More exciting than ever before. You never really gave a rip before you had 15 fantasy teams about whether or not Kirk Cousins was going to throw the ball all over the yard in the fourth quarter when they're down by 20 points. Now you do. So I think it's fairly obvious what's going on here. For me, I don't like the product. But I'm addicted to the product. And I'm addicted to it because I gamble. I'm addicted to it because of fantasy football. All right, coming up next, head coach of the Pitt Panthers, 2-0, coming off of a massive, massive victory over Cincinnati. A massive, massive second half comeback. a redshirt freshman quarterback that absolutely looks the part. And Pat Narduzzi's going to join us to talk about all of it. First, though, your heart care matters. Trust the experts at UPMC and get your heart screened.
Sorsby barks. Back with a snap. Sets up. Fires it over the middle. It is caught. They lateral. And they get it at the 35. Panthers miss a tackle, miss another. Turning it to the 34-yard line. They throw it. And it's
ball game, baby. Let's go.
Ball game.
Hail to Pitt.
Ball game.
Hail to Pitt.
Look at those Panthers celebrate, and the Pitt fans celebrate as well. One of the greatest comebacks in the history of University of Pittsburgh football we have witnessed at Nippert Stadium today.
Hey, Cincinnati. Hey, student section. I heard a lot of eat, you know what, Pitt. Eat that.
That gets me every single time. Pat Bostic, eat that. Biggest comeback for Pitt since, I believe, 1971. And we're joined right now by the head coach of the Pitt Panthers, Pat Narduzzi. Big game this weekend. Hell of a win last weekend. Congratulations on that dub, coach, and appreciate you jumping on. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Adam. I appreciate it. That was a long time ago. We're moving on to the next, obviously, with that big one this weekend at 3:30, at Acrisure Stadium. So we're excited and moving on.
I would imagine, though, that game gave you guys confidence that you're never out of a ball game. And I got to imagine, Pat, that you got a lot of confidence in that quarterback, too.
No doubt about it. We got a lot of confidence in the O-line, the running backs, whatever it may be. But it does help you, obviously win that football game. It does give your football team confidence that regardless of what happens, sometimes – you're preaching as a coach. If we're down seven, you got some of those guys got looks in their eyes like, okay, coach. There was probably some of those points last year. Now I think they know that, hey, anything can happen. We can do it. And, if you can come back 21, you can do anything.
Is that something that you have in a group before the year, or do you have to experience it to know, okay, I've got a group that's never going to shy away from that moment?
No, you don't. You never know until the moment, and sometimes you don't get the moment to find out if you have that or not. But you don't know going into a season if your guys are going to buy in like that, think like that. I think every team's a little bit different. Everybody's got a little different chemistry, and you certainly didn't think last year's team would have been like that. You hope you have something a little bit different this year.
You mentioned the big one, 3:30 backyard brawl. Now, you've coached this game twice between these two teams. What's the biggest thing you might have learned or that may have surprised you that you didn't know before the rivalry got renewed here?
I'd say, there's really nothing. I mean, the biggest difference between this rivalry and some other great rivalries I've been in the past is, there's no trophy. You're playing for nothing. You're playing for, the bragging rights in the area of Western Pennsylvania. I think that's really all you play for. So to me, it becomes even a tougher rivalry. We're not playing for a toy or a piece of wood, a piece of metal. We're playing for the game, the way it should be played. So I love it. I love that it's a blue collar rivalry like that, that we're not playing for a trophy but there's really nothing. I mean, rivalries are rivalries. I think when the big ones like this one, and I've played a big one in the past that for 8 years at Michigan State, and this one's just like it, and you got to treat it the same.
So you say you treat the rivalry the same. Did you have to juice guys up for the rivalry before the game 2 years ago, and maybe they'd understand it more now with a lot of the guys having played through it?
No, I think your rivalries are built, and I think you can juice them up all you want. I don't think that really matters. I think once the game starts,
sure.
And I think you forget about any of that juice you ever had or thought you had. If your mind isn't right going into that game and you don't have, the right mindset, then it doesn't really matter. I mean, I want to, teach our guys what it is and what happens. And I think probably the best thing that could ever happen to you is you go down and have an outcome like you did last year. I think that's when you realize the real rivalry. I think if you're 5-0 in the rivalry and, the younger kids aren't going to buy into it being a rivalry, it doesn't become a rivalry until you take one in the LCOM, and then your guys start to understand. The whole program starts to understand what a rivalry is.
Pat Narduzzi joining us here on the Fan Morning Show. How did the hiring of, and I know you've talked about this before, but how did the hiring of Cade Bell come to be? I've brought this up. Like Mike Gundy used to say, hey, if we need a new coordinator, I'm going either FCS level or I'm looking and I'm seeing, okay, who led that level in scoring? Who led that level in points? I'm going to put my finger down on a piece of paper and I'm going to bring that guy in. I'm sure it's more complicated than that, but how did that all go down?
Yeah, it's more complicated, but, you know, it comes down to that right there. I mean, like, who's having success? But just because they're having success doesn't mean they're a fit for you and what your players do and who you are as a program. So, you know, it had to come down to, you know, hey, who's having success? And then do they fit you? Do they fit your personality? Can you get along with them as a head coach? And, you know, all those things, like, you know, and again, Cade Bell is a perfect fit. I mean, I feel like we're brothers already. I mean, in this office, I mean, you know, just you laugh, you have fun, and you work your tail off. And that's kind of, it's a brotherhood in here. And we spend so many hours together. You're talking, you know, 17, 18 hours a day. You're in here working on stuff. And I think, you know, I think it comes down to, you know, just the brotherhood in here, and you better feel good with them. But, you know, you better first have the stuff on the field. And then it comes down to, you know, it's not like we looked at one guy for that position. You know, he was the perfect guy for this spot.
Now, my understanding, he doesn't script plays at practice, correct? I mean, how unconventional is that? And how does that help your defense and you practice defense kind of having to react on the fly?
Yeah, it doesn't help your defense at all. And I think, you know, the main reason for scripting plays, you know, in a practice, you know, I'd always like scripting because I didn't want to run, you know, three of the same defense versus three of the same type of play. Like, I always wanted to get variety so I could teach off of the tape. So it really hurts the defense because we don't know what we're going to get, and you're just kind of winging it, you know, when you go out to practice. I mean, it's easier because you don't have to script, because it takes a long time to script and get exactly what you want. But, you know, that's what scripting is. It's like, I want to script it the perfect scenario. I want to run this defense versus this play. So it really doesn't help the defense ball at all. But, and again, I think a lot of tempo teams, you know, around the country do it now. I would say half the country probably doesn't script. I don't know. You know, they just call it. And again, I think, you know, there's some beauty to the play calling. We used to always have, you know, when I was at Michigan State as a D coordinator, we'd have periods where Coach D'Antonio would say, hey, don't, you know, no scripting, just it's a call it period. We didn't have many of them, but we did 10 during camp. And it was just a 10-minute period where you didn't know anything. You had to check the personnel coming in the huddle, check all those things. So I think it's unique in the way he does it. But again, I think it's that creativity that he can spit it out fast, and he better be when you're snapping the ball quick.
Last thing here for you, Pat. And I know that when I talked about Eli Holstein earlier, you mentioned the offensive line playing well, all the weapons at disposal. Running back seems to be quite good. Just what I've seen. But as far as Eli is concerned, not super great in the first half, unbelievably good in the second half. Kenny Pickett, freshman, beats number two Miami. Does Eli have any similar, maybe off-the-field traits that a guy like Kenny has that maybe you think, okay, it predicts greatness here?
Yeah, I don't want to predict that yet. We're into two games and going into number three. I think at the end of the year we can make comparisons and all that, but I don't want to do that to him. I think it's a one game at a time. I just want to focus in on the present, focusing on West Virginia at 3:30 on Saturday. You guys in the media, you guys can talk about comparisons. I'll let you guys, how many hours are you on the radio today? I'll let you for your 6 hours on the radio today. You guys can talk about that. And we'll focus on, you know, who he is. He's Eli Holstein, and I want him to be Eli Holstein.
Pat Narduzzi, big game coming up at 3:30. On Saturday, and I think for both fan bases, it's either the best day of the year or the worst day of the year. I know you've got a lot of preparation still that you're doing, Coach, so appreciate you coming on, and best of luck on Saturday.
You got it, Adam. I appreciate you having me on, and hail to Pitt, buddy.
Take care now. Good luck.
Thank you.
Pat Narduzzi, really appreciate him coming on. It's a busy week, and there's a lot of stuff going on, obviously, over there with Heather Lyk being out as athletic director. He was asked about it at his press conference, talked about it at the press conference. I wasn't going to ask him the question there. I wanted to get down to brass tacks and football. He was not going to say anything different than he said at the press conference. Because as you can tell, very focused. And I knew, at least I thought I knew, how he would answer the Eli Holstein question. You don't want to compare him to the guy that won the ACC championship and finished third in the Heisman voting. You don't want to do that. You don't want to put that on a guy's shoulders. And I'm a West Virginia guy saying this, so you know it's coming unbiased. You do not see a freshman quarterback, redshirt freshman quarterback, come in and do the things in two games, his first two starts that Eli Holstein has done. Eli Holstein looked really good. Could have thrown some picks in the first game. Still looked really good through for over 300 yards. Beautiful throw to Kenny Johnson down the sideline. Second game, not good in the first half. Just call it what it is. Outstanding in the second half. Freshmen don't do that. Well, I saw a freshman do that. I saw Geno Smith do that. They were down 13 points against Marshall, came back, scored two touchdowns, final two drives of the game, go to overtime, leads another scoring drive. When freshmen do that, they're going to be really good football players. I think Eli Holstein is going to be a really good football player. And we'll see if he can put together two halves on Saturday. It might not take that. It's not. You don't always got to be perfect to win football games. They weren't on Saturday. They'd admit that. I'm expecting a game that looks a lot more like 2 years ago than the one that we saw in Morgantown last year. And these teams are totally different. West Virginia's got a different quarterback going to play in this game. Pitt's got a different quarterback that's going to be playing in this game. West Virginia's star running back going to be playing in this game. Didn't play in the game last year. Pitt's totally different offensively. There are so many things that are different. It's not going to be 211 yards to 211 yards again. Both teams can score. Both teams, I think, have had some lapses defensively, although I think Pitt's defense further along. Can't wait to watch it. It should be aesthetically pleasing. Last year, yeesh. All right. Coming up next, Pat Bostic going to join us for 2 hours. We'll get back into the backyard brawl with Bill Hillgrove at 7:50. Jeff Hathorn's going to join us at 7:35. But we got to ask Pat first about the Steelers quarterback situation. We blew right past the 50-minute mark. I didn't want to interrupt Narduzzi. Brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And Fan Weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet 2024 Chevy Silverado 1500, 1.9% financing, up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms at sunchevy.com.